Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Finals!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.
Welcome to a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. It's right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Happy to be along with you on the afternoon drive as we talk both local and national sports. And today, well, we'll talk plenty of NFL football. How about that game last night? I believe Aaron Rodgers to be a top five quarterback of all time. If you don't, performances like last night should probably persuade you otherwise, because this guy is pretty good at football. You know who else is pretty good? Khalil Mack. I mean, there were plenty of storylines in this Packer-Bears game last night. But today, the talk is definitely about Aaron Rodgers. Carted off the field at one time. By his reaction, I thought that Aaron Rodgers' season was done. I thought that the Deshaun Kizer era was underway in Green Bay, which for me, it's not all doom and gloom because McCarthy had his choice between Hundley and Kizer, and he went with Kizer. But Aaron Rodgers, able to make his way back onto the field and pulled off one of the biggest comebacks of his entire career. The Packers were down 20-0. Rodgers missed three series in the first half, threw three second-half touchdown passes, and Green Bay picks up a 24-3 win over the Chicago Bears. And again, it matched the longest, largest comeback of Rodgers' career. The Packers were down by 20 in that game against Detroit back in 2015, where Rodgers threw the Hail Mary. I mean, just an extraordinary game. As far as his status moving forward, look, there was an injury there. There was a massive injury. The reaction, or at least some of the comments I was reading on Facebook and Twitter about Aaron Rodgers not being injured, he was injured. I mean, his knee was definitely torqued in that whole incident where he went down to the ground. I mean, you watch the video. This wasn't Paul Pierce in the NBA Finals. Aaron Rodgers was hurt. Mike McCarthy could not or would not say any specifics today regarding his quarterback's knee injury or on if he will play against the Minnesota Vikings this upcoming weekend. But nonetheless, it was a terrific performance last night from Aaron Rodgers. Packers come back. They nullify what was an outstanding performance by Khalil Mack. Scores a touchdown in his first game as a Chicago Bear. We'll talk more about Khalil Mack, I'm sure, a little bit later on in the show, because we have to talk about the two games tonight in the NFL to close out Week 1. Doubleheader action on Monday Night Football. The first game, it'll feature the first career start for Jets quarterback Sam Darnold. He's on the road to take on the Detroit Lions. Here's Sam Darnold earlier today talking about his first game, his first career start.
It's an amazing feeling. I'm really just, you know, really happy to be able to go out there and play with all these guys that right now we've been practicing for a long time, you know, OTAs, training camp, and now, you know, we got the Lions Monday night. So it's going to be a really fun first start for me in the NFL.
I actually like Sam Darnold. If you listen to the show enough, you know, there's not a whole lot that I like coming from Southern Cal. At least from USC, I like Sam Darnold. Like him a lot. Think he's the real deal. I think he is going to be the answer for the Jets long term. Baptism by fire. That's what's happening tonight for Sam Darnold. On the flip side, Matt Stafford talking about the Jets defense. You know, we talk about the offense a lot in the quarterback scenario in New York. But the fact remains, Todd Bowles is a defensive-minded coach, and Matt Stafford talked about the defense that the Lions will see tonight.
Their entire back end is really talented. Got some young guys, got some guys that have been in the league, you know, different type of players back there, but really talented players. Both their linebackers can really run, flow to the football. You know, their front's a really good front, too. Obviously, 92 is a heck of a player, too. So, you know, it's on us to go out there and execute against a stout defense.
Again, that's the first game of doubleheader action. Kickoff for the Jets, Lions, set at 5:10 p.m. on ESPN. Second game of that doubleheader tonight, 8:20. The Rams on the road to take on the Oakland Raiders. The Rams have got to be one of the front runners. There's no question in the NFC. They've got to be one of the front runners. The Rams have stacked that defense. It's year two under Wade Phillips, one of the best defensive minds in the NFL. But the big storyline tonight is the return of John Gruden. Sure, we got to see him through four games in the preseason, but we didn't really, because the Raiders were so vanilla throughout the preseason. Gruden wasn't unveiling anything as far as what we'll see offensively tonight. That's what makes this game interesting. The Rams, on the flip side, very similar. We didn't see Todd Gurley in the preseason at all. Here's John Gruden talking about his first game back after a long hiatus, first year of what should be many in the silver and black after that 10-year contract.
This is really special for me. I know there's been a lot of news this week with, you know, what has happened, but I want to do everything I can to help bring the Raiders back, and I really like the effort that our team has put forth, our coaching staff, and it'll be special going out there Monday night, that's for sure.
Again, on the flip side, the Rams coming off an impressive season. They went 11-5, won the NFC West first time, and boy, it was like, what, 15 years that the Rams had gone to the postseason. Jared Goff took big steps last year. He talks about the first game of the season tonight for his team.
Very excited to get out there and finally get some competitive, truly competitive action with our offense, and it'll be fun. You know, we're really excited to be under the lights, big time game Monday night, and against, like I said, against a good team with the Raiders, and it'll be really cool. We're excited to get out there as an offense, and I mean, the defense only played a little bit too. I know they're excited as well.
Rams Raiders will kick off after the Lions and the Jets. 8:20 is the scheduled start time for that contest. Now, continuing on with the NFL, some bad news for fantasy football owners and, of course, the Tennessee Titans. Delanie Walker, stud tight end. Delanie Walker is used as a wide receiver in Tennessee. Suffered a broken ankle and some ligament damage yesterday. He's not expected to play again in 2018. The Titans did place him on the injured reserve today, but they did not disclose the nature of the injury. And then they signed McCoyle Pruitt of the Texans practice squad in a corresponding move. That pretty much means that Delanie Walker's season is over. Mike Vrabel said that Walker had a leg injury and would undergo surgery in the next couple of days. And so that pretty much means that he is finished. That's not the only bad news for Tennessee as well. Taylor Lewan, he's under concussion protocol, and Mike Vrabel, head coach, said that he wasn't doing anything until he was cleared. As for the hit by Andre Branch, Vrabel said that he didn't feel it was dirty, but he absolutely thought that Lewan was targeted in that ordeal. So some storylines coming out of the NFL. We'll recap everything a little bit later on in the show. The new top 25 rankings for college football are out. They came out yesterday, and I'll tell you, it was an exciting weekend for college football. If you're a Utah Ute fan, you're probably not too pleased with what you've seen over the first 2 weeks. The Utes were not good in the first half against Weber State. The Utes were not good offensively this past Saturday against Northern Illinois. In fact, Northern Illinois had the ball late in the fourth quarter with a chance to beat Utah. The Utes came up with a big defensive play, Chase Hansen with a pick six to seal the deal. But at the same time, the Utes, didn't score enough points on the eye test for the coaches. Still not in the top 25 in the coach or the AP poll, but the Utah Utes will have an opportunity this week as they continue the season against Washington. The Utes would be number 26 in the AP poll. Arizona State under Herm Edwards, they're in the top 25 at number 23. USC drops to number 22. They are now 1-1 following a loss to Stanford. Outside of that, the Pac-12 still getting some love in the top 10. Washington at number 10 now that they are 1-1. Stanford's win over USC places them 9. And that's basically where the Pac-12 is sitting as far as the top 25 rankings go. We'll take a look at all of that in general in just a bit here on Drive Time Sports. College football Monday, NFL football tonight. I know it's easy to forget about Major League Baseball, but you can't, because we are now down to the final 19 games of the regular season, and there are some very big games in store for us tonight. We take a look at the Major League Baseball schedule. Getting ready to start right now, the Houston Astros will send Justin Verlander on the mound to take on the Detroit Tigers. Houston, two games up on the Oakland A's and the AL West. Tonight, Dodgers, Reds, 4:40, big game. Alex Wood will take the mound for the Dodgers. Cody Reed on the hill for Cincinnati. The Dodgers, a half game back of the Rockies in the NL West, again with about 19 games to play. We get Washington at Philadelphia at 5:05. Cleveland will travel to meet Tampa Bay. Then we get Milwaukee at Chicago at 6 p.m. on ESPN. 6:10 tonight, the Yankees take on the Minnesota Twins. We get the White Sox and the Kansas City Royals at 6:15. We get the Cardinals, who hold a one-game lead over the Dodgers in the National League wildcard spot, taking on the Pittsburgh Pirates at 6:15. Arizona at Colorado, huge game here. Zach Godley going up against Jermaine Marquez for the Colorado Rockies. Again, the Rockies a half-game advantage over the Dodgers in the NL West. The Diamondbacks one game back of the Dodgers, two games back of the Rockies. Huge game tonight for NL West purposes. 8:07 tonight, we get the Rangers at the Angels. Nightcap game, it's the Braves, who are closing in on a division title, taking on the struggling San Francisco Giants, who have now lost eight consecutive games. One contest postponed, that's Miami at the Mets. We will talk more Major League Baseball next segment. Bill Lasky, former Major League Baseball pitcher, will join us, as he does every Monday, for a Major League Baseball conversation. We've got to get out for a quick commercial break. Again, plenty coming your way. Mondays are going to be busy from here on out. We'll talk Major League Baseball in just a moment. Plus, you're going to get a local sports recap. It's all straight ahead on this Monday edition of Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. Reporting from the KOAL newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. And we will begin on the high school football field, where Friday night the Emory Spartans dipped to 0-4, suffering a loss in the final non-region game, this time at home to the Manti Templars by a final score of 28-0. The Spartans battled hard throughout the contest, but the second half belonged to Manti. Individually in this contest, Spartans were led offensively by senior quarterback Kyson Stilson, who completed 11 of 22 passes for 120 yards. On the ground, it was Ranch Jensen. He accumulated 73 yards off of 17 attempts. While Emory was effective in moving the ball in between the 20s, they were unable to put any points up and dipping to 0-4. With the non-region season now complete, the Spartans will turn their attention to the 3A North opener this Friday in a road contest against Judge Memorial. Live coverage of this contest will begin on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM at 6:30 PM, followed by kickoff at 7. And we continue with high school football, but we move over to Carbon High School, where the Dinos suffered a 41-21 loss to the Ogden Tigers in what was a classic game in which Ogden pulled away late to preserve the victory. The Dinos had several opportunities in the second half to actually take the lead. They were led in the contest by Colin Lewis, who accumulated 175 yards of total offense. The Dinos are now also 0-4 on the season. They will look to earn their first victory when they return to the field on Friday. This will be a road contest against the Union Cougars. And again, that will be in the 3A North opener. Live coverage of this contest will begin on KRPX 95.3 The Peak, beginning at 6:30 p.m. with the Landon's Diesel Service pregame show, followed by kickoff at 7. We move over to junior college athletics, and over the weekend, the USU Eastern Women's Volleyball Squad took care of business as they participated in an invitational tournament in Rangeley, Colorado. The Lady Eagles finished a perfect 4-0 on Friday and Saturday. After struggling at their tournament in Arizona last weekend, head coach Daniel Jensen said she was happy to see her team improve so much in Colorado. On Friday, the Lady Eagles opened the tournament with a 3-1 victory over Lamar Community College. For their second game of the day on Friday, they took down Central Wyoming 3-1. Saturday, the momentum continued for the Lady Eagles. They once again picked up a victory, this time defeating Dawson 3-0. And they wrapped up the weekend with a 3-1 win over Western Wyoming, getting revenge for a 3-2 loss in the first game of the season back on August 4th. The Lady Eagles lost the first set to Western Wyoming before taking control of the game, both offensively and defensively. The Eagles will finish their non-conference schedule this upcoming weekend with a trip to Las Vegas for the CSN tournament. They open the tournament on Friday in a game against the number 11th ranked team of the country, Western Nebraska, at 4 p.m. We stick with USU Eastern, but we move over to men's soccer. The USU Eastern men's squad won and lost against the College of Southern Nevada on Friday and Saturday at home. In the conference opener on Friday, the Eagles would need the full 90 minutes and almost two overtime periods to get the win, but they ended up with a 2-1 victory. It was a win over a ranked opponent for USU Eastern. The two teams would meet again the following day, and after picking up the emotional win on Friday, the Eagles suffered a setback, splitting the weekend. They'll now travel this upcoming weekend to Salt Lake City to take on the nationally ranked Salt Lake Community College squad Friday and Saturday. Stay tuned to Castle Country Radio. We'll catch up with Coach Ammon Bennett a little later on in the week to talk about the team. The USU Eastern women's squad was also in action over the weekend. They picked up one win and one tie against CSN. The first one was a 2-2 draw. The second was a 2-0 victory on Saturday. The Eagles will hit the road this week with the men's squad to take on Salt Lake Friday and Saturday. Both teams will return home Saturday, September 22nd for a non-conference game against Otero. You can find more news, sports, and community events at CastleCountryRadio.com. Reporting, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
Hey, this is Nick Tropiano with the Anaheim Angels, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
Time to talk Major League Baseball. I know at this time of the year, football starting up, college football's moving forward, the NFL, you know, we get Monday night action tonight. It's easy to forget about Major League Baseball, but you can't, because we're really getting down to the heart of the season, final 20 games of the regular season. And Bill Lasky, former Major League Baseball pitcher, now an analyst for the San Francisco Giants, has joined us throughout the year, and he's joining us again right now. Bill, as always, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
A little tighter in some of the divisions, and playoff baseball is around the corner.
It definitely is. We're down to the final 20 games, and as I alluded to you off the air, you and I were talking a bit, the NL West, we get no clarity in this division. The Dodgers and the Rockies have created a little bit of space between the Diamondbacks, and by a little bit, I mean 2.5 games, which is still relatively nothing. The Diamondbacks have just not played good baseball over the last 10 games. But the Dodgers and Rockies, I mean, this is an interesting race as we get down to the final 20 games.
It sure is. That whole NL West is, and I still think there's life left in Arizona. It's just, can they put any kind of offensive numbers to get through some of the competition down the road? And, you know, those things are going to be a big, big step here if they're going to try to win the NL West, because it's going to be tough to get the wild card position with Milwaukee and St. Louis playing good baseball.
Right. The Dodgers and Rockies are probably your two best bets if someone from the NL West is going to grab a wild card. As far as Arizona goes, I mean, I take a look at the last, I don't know, 10 games for this team. I mean, they lost 3 out of 4 to the Dodgers, 3 consecutively. They split with the Padres and then suffered a couple of bad losses with the Braves, a 9-5 and a 5-4 loss. And I'm looking at the pitching rotation at this stage in the year, Bill. I did not expect the Diamondbacks to be giving up 6, 7, 5 runs a game.
I agree with you. I mean, their pitching has been pretty solid the whole time, and just recently, you know, they came in here and played pretty well. The Giants went and played the Diamondbacks earlier this in the contest recently, and it's just been a struggle for the D-backs, and they picked up a couple pitchers that really have not shown what they can do. So we'll see if the Diamondbacks have any kind of life with them in the next, 19 games left?
Yeah, really, I guess the departure of J.D. Martinez is now really starting to show, because, I mean, right now they're just not scoring enough runs. I know the pitching rotation hasn't been great, but they can't keep pace with opposing teams, and I look at a lack of power in the middle of the lineup, and that's what J.D. Martinez provided last year.
Hey, and look at what he's doing with Boston. I mean, that was a huge pickup for them, and Boston with, you know, close to 100 wins now, and they're just taking away so much of the American League. And, of course, Houston went in there and took 2 out of 3. But still, J.D. Martinez fits into an American League team so much better than a National League team.
Now, again, you mentioned the NL wild card, and it is handled right now by the Brewers and the Cardinals. But the Cardinals just one game up in the win column, I guess one game overall in the Dodgers, one win up on the Rockies in the win column. So it's not all hope is not lost for the NL West as far as these teams competing for a division crown. There's still a great chance that they could sneak in, although I like the Cardinals' chances.
Yeah, the Cardinals always seem to have that late life with them. They're going home for a big homestand. And, of course, the Milwaukee Brewers are playing the Cubs in Chicago. So there's going to be a lot of head-to-head coming down here the last couple weeks. And that always dictates who's going to be hot and who's not when it comes to the playoffs, because you want to be hot in the last couple weeks. And I'm right there with you. The Cardinals are such a stellar organization, and they have the talent to do it. So we'll see if they can hold on and pick up a wild card position. And maybe the Brewers, too. Maybe those are your two top teams that will be fighting for that one-game competition.
Bill, if we stick with the National League for a moment, I do want to get your thoughts on the National League East. The Atlanta Braves now 4.5 up on the Phillies. Philadelphia was there for the taking. I mean, it's not as if the Braves have been playing lights-out baseball. I think they're around 500 the last 13, 14 games, but the Phillies have been below 500, and the Braves have managed to open up a 4.5 game lead. One of the things that is so interesting to me about the Braves, the youth on this team, and I still think they're playing a year ahead of schedule. They are 42-30 on the road. They have a better record on the road than they do at home. That's rare for a team with this kind of youth.
No doubt there. I didn't know those numbers. Those numbers are astonishing to me when you're playing on the road. Toughest places to play are on the road. Usually play so much better at home. The same thing with the Rockies. The Rockies play better at home, on the road, too. So it's interesting, but that is a positive for them to think that way when they go into the division playoffs and as we get further into the playoff season and see exactly what's going to take place. But that's a huge momentum lift for that club going into a visiting team.
Let me ask you this. You and I had a conversation about the National League MVP, and last week I said Nolan Arenado would probably top my ballot. And I think the NL MVP is one of those races where you could probably go a couple of different directions. And I started dissecting things, and I was talking to a listener, and it really is my bad to not point out that Nick Markakis probably deserves some pub in this race as well. He's not getting a lot. I mean, playing out in right field, he's been good defensively. He's batting .309, leads the team in RBIs, leads the team in hits. Yet not a lot of people are talking about Markakis. And I bring his name up because, like the Rockies, to me it's a surprise that the Braves are in this spot. And offensively, he's kind of been the glue that's held this team together all year.
Yeah, an unsung hero, no doubt, and a player that was really a subpar player. I mean, he's been just lights out for the Braves the entire season, and he's that type of name. You know, you hear Freeman and all the rookies that are thrown out there, and he's that type of guy that's going to lead them to the pack. Another name, just watching the Brewers over the weekend, is Yelich. He's just having a sensational second half of the year. And that's another name that I would probably throw in there in an MVP candidate, too.
Yeah, there's a couple of names that I just don't think you would have mentioned. I know when Yelich decided to join Milwaukee, I mean, that was a big boost. That was a big boost when Milwaukee acquired him. I don't know that I could have predicted that Yelich was going to be an MVP candidate. I liked Milwaukee at the beginning of the season, but I like the fact that we're talking about different names. We're not talking about Chris Bryant. We're not talking about Bryce Harper. We're not talking about, you know, someone, I guess, on the LA team that dominated the National League last year. We're talking about Arenado, Yelich, and Markakis. I like that. That's good for the game.
I do too, and they're all different kind of flavors in all those players, and younger names coming to the forefront, and you're just seeing their talent be exposed even better and better as we keep watching them year to year. And these are all young players that have a sensational future for the game of baseball.
All right, Bill, I'll put you on the spot before we move away from the National League. If you had to give me five teams that you believe will be in the postseason in the next couple of weeks, who would you pick right now with about 20 games left to play?
In the National League?
Yeah, in the National League.
National League or American League?
National League.
Yeah, National League, I would have to say Atlanta's going to pull that off. I really believe that's going to be a strength there. You know, when you're looking at the Cardinals and the Brewers, I would think those are going to be your two teams that are going to be in the wild card. I believe the Cubs will win that division. And then out the NL West, boy, I can't pick a team out of those top three. It's just going to be difficult because I like Colorado, and the Dodgers are always strong at the end, and the Diamondbacks, I still think they have life in them. So those three, I just can't pick a name yet. It's just all in the... It's going to happen here in a dogfight here in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, there's a stretch on this Rockies schedule that, to me, I mean, again, I know you got to play a lot of division opponents at the end of the season, but boy, they got to play a lot of familiar foes down the stretch. And I mean, right now you got a 4-game set with Arizona after dropping 2 of 3 against the Dodgers, and then you got to travel on the road for a long stretch, a 3-game set with the Giants, a 3-game set with the Dodgers, a 3-game set with the Diamondbacks. That's the telling tale for the Rockies. There's 9 days in the middle of this schedule that will tell us if this team is for real or not come postseason hopes.
Yep, I believe so too. And you know, when you go to head-to-head, it's all about who's hot, who's not. We keep talking about it, but the teams that are hot in the last week is just going to come right into the playoffs. And anybody in the NL West, if they're going to win the West, is going to be pretty lukewarm or boiling hot. So we'll see how this all translates in the next couple of weeks in the National League.
Let's jump to the AL. You mentioned the Red Sox closing in on 100 wins. They've run away with the American League East. You know, the Astros and the A's, it's been a fun race. The A's have created a ton of space between them and the Mariners. They're a lock at this point in time. The Astros, 2.5 better than the A's. They took care of business in a series. And then you have the Indians in the Central. Now, the Indians are a team that are a little under the radar. I know you know Terry Francona well. On top of all that, they acquired Josh Donaldson. And to me, this could be an X-factor move for the Indians moving forward into the postseason. It's not every day you're able to land someone like Josh Donaldson. And I know that there's some controversy around the deal, but at the same time, boy, that's a strong move this late in the season.
It is. And, you know, you keep hearing all the people and the reporters saying, well, how'd that deal get done? There's still a little money left on his contract. Then they put him on injury reserve or whatever it's called, DL. And what's happening now is they're going to have him as a potential a power bat off the bench, maybe in the lineup with, if somebody goes down. But that was a deal under the table, and it just strengthened their entire team on the field as well as a pinch hitter. And the strength of Josh Donaldson getting well is going to be the key here. The health of the matters of Josh are going to be a big plus for the Indians if everything goes right.
Is that a team that you see causing some headaches for someone once we get to the playoffs, be it the Red Sox or the Astros?
I just think their pitching's still a question. I just think the Red Sox are the strongest team. Houston is playing very well. And I keep throwing these Oakland A's out here. They are continuing to play good baseball, 2.5 games behind Houston. And don't throw the A's out yet. They may have a little energy left at the end. And they're watching that scoreboard every game Houston's playing. You know that.
Yeah, you know, I don't want to count Oakland out. In fact, about a month ago, I thought they were going to come back and win the AL West. Here's what's impressing me about the A's. They're winning games that they should be winning. For instance, you have a 3-game set with the Yankees. You take 2 out of 3. You have a 3-game set with the Rangers. They cold sweep it. That's what is so, I don't want to use the word intriguing, but that's what's so consistent about this A's team. They're winning the games that they should be winning down the stretch.
They are, and they're taking sweeps. They just swept the Rangers, took 2 out of 3 from the Yankees, took 2 out of 3 from the Astros. They started using their bullpen as a starting pitcher. Bob Melvin's trying all different ways, and every way he's doing, they're getting the offense. Chris Davis having an MVP year. Chapman, Olsen just dialed in. And you know, it just keeps going on. And the unsung hero, I believe, is Bob Melvin. He's being a genius in some of the moves he's making, and there's no doubt AL Manager of the Year.
Before I let you go, Bill, I want to jump back over to the National League. We're talking Bay Area baseball with the Oakland A's. The San Francisco Giants, you mentioned this earlier, they haven't played good ball. They've lost 8 consecutive, 9 out of their last 10. Haven't played well since the McCutchen deal. Did that affect the team at all?
No, I just think it's just the offense. The offense is just gone nil. They just have too many young players in there, and they're just not developed enough yet. The home run numbers are right back down, bottom five in Major League Baseball, and they're just not driving runs in. The pitching has really kept them in so many close games, and now they're starting to leak a little oil out of the bullpen because they were in so many games. They've been in half of the games for the Giants because they're not getting stretches with their starters. So there's going to be a revamping out here for sure with the Giants. I don't know which way they're going to go, if they're going to go with some older players or free agency or a rebuild. So there's a lot of question marks, but when you're losing 7-8 games in a row, there's some definite problems in that clubhouse.
I'll tell you who's a disappointment for me for the Giants this season. Joe Panik started off on such a tremendous tear, and I thought, okay, I believe he's in his fourth season, if I'm not mistaken, and just the way he started the season, I thought this is his breakout year. He's a career 276 hitter, batting 243, and the way his campaign started, Bill, that's kind of a disappointment to see the numbers at 243 with 4 home runs and an OBP of less than 300.
I agree. He's had a subpar year, and last year with injuries, and he just isn't the Joe Panik we remember when he first came up, and so many different players now are playing second base, from Darno to Hanson to Tomlinson, And that might be a free agent move. And they're looking at DJ LeMay from Colorado, who's a free agent. And that was one of the names that was just recent story that they are going to go out and try to find a better second baseman. So maybe Joe's name is going to be in trade bait and possibly in a couple trades this offseason. So I think you're 100% right. Joe Panik, this isn't the same guy that we saw when he came up.
Bill Lasky, again, former Major League pitcher, joins us each week to talk Major League Baseball. Bill, before I let you go, please let the listeners know where they can find more of your work.
Yeah, on Twitter, at Lasky19, KNBR podcast. We have some stuff up there, KNBR.com. Take a peek at that. We had a great show this past Saturday, and you can see our podcast there and listen to them. So I appreciate all your listeners checking in. I appreciate the time with you every Monday. And let's see how this thing breaks down the next couple weeks.
It's the fun time of the year. We've been talking for close to a year. I mean, even hot stove in the offseason. Now we're down to the final couple of weeks of the regular season. This is the fun time, to say the least.
Yeah, I agree with you. And so have a good week, and I'm looking forward to talking to you next month.
Again, Bill Lasky talking some Major League Baseball. I know it's football season. Can't forget that we're in the heart of baseball. Got a break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Hey, what's going on? This is Ron Artest, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan. Listen, you must... say it again? Buscarini? All right. Jordan Buscarini. All right. With Jordan Buscarini. Shout out to Queens, as you already know.
Coming to you live from Price.
Put that cookie down.
Price, Utah.
Now.
Me and my man, Trav.
Yeah!
Love Price. Price is awesome.
Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini and Travis Anderson on KOAL AM 750. Eastern Utah's main source for local sporting news.
Back on Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM, 750 AM. I want to talk college football for this particular segment. A lot of good college football games over the weekend. A lot of good football. Week 2 was a little bit of a downer, I guess, in comparison to week 1. I mean, we had some really major marquee matchups. There were three games in particular that I was really looking forward to over the weekend. One being Georgia, South Carolina. I thought Will Muschamp's group could pull off the upset. Didn't know if they would, but I thought that was an interesting game. USC and Stanford, and then Clemson and Texas A&M. And out of those three games, I thought that Clemson and Texas A&M would be the most lopsided. It wasn't. It turned out to be the best game. Texas A&M came to play. And I've been on two other radio stations today recapping the college football week. Love going on Steve Bornstein's show. He joins us here on Drive Time Sports regularly. We have some great college football conversations there. This game really came down to the end. Clemson, once again, defensively, on point, preventing Texas A&M from tying the game. They pick up a 28-26 win. And that's kind of been a reoccurring theme with Clemson. And one of the things I appreciate so much about Dabo Swinney, his players will run through a brick wall for him. He is a player's coach. And as far as X's and O's go, yeah, he's top five in college football. There's no question about it. Texas A&M outscores Clemson 13-0 in the fourth quarter, but guess what? They couldn't get that two-point conversion. And that's why Clemson comes out on top. Kelly Bryant was fine in this game. He was admirable. 12 of 17, 205 yards and a touchdown. He was good on the ground, 15 carries, 54 yards. I know what Clemson has offensively, Travis Etienne. I think he only had 8 or 9 carries on the night. But once again, Clemson provides enough offensive punch. It's the defense that's going to continue to win them football games. This was exciting. Late in the game, Texas A&M takes advantage of a 22-yard punt by Clemson. And really, it became the Kellen Mond and the Kendrick Rogers show. A&M's able to drive down the field in three plays, help from a penalty, score a touchdown, couldn't get the two-point conversion. That was a great game. That was great college football, primetime college football matchup. Georgia, South Carolina. I was impressed by Georgia. To me, they're the number two team in the country. This is a big win. South Carolina is a good football team. And really, it was Georgia from the beginning. They score the first two touchdowns of the contest. Didn't take long for them to get up 14-0 in the first quarter. South Carolina hung around at 17-7 at the end of the first quarter. South Carolina cuts it to 7 in the second, and after that, it's all Georgia. I thought this game would be entertaining. I thought that this game was going to come down to the wire, and a 21-point third quarter for Georgia put that game out of reach. To me, it's the second-best team in the country. Kirby Smart's doing great things in Georgia. They're picking up right where they left off last season. Jake Fromm, all the way around, I just like this Georgia football team. I liked them last year. I thought they were the best team in the country last year going in to the national championship game. Fromm was very efficient on Saturday, 15 of 18. He's got a year under his belt. Plus, they have Evander Holyfield's kid in the backfield. I don't know if a lot of people know that, Elijah Holyfield. Georgia, South Carolina, thought it was going to be a great game. It wasn't. And then that third game that I had to mention, USC-Stanford, from a Pac-12 perspective, especially in the South, if you're a Ute fan, you probably should have paid attention to this game. Bryce Love was not good week one. San Diego State bottled him up. He was not good. I did not think that was going to happen again, even though I think quite highly of USC's defense. I knew Bryce Love was going to get out and run in this game, and that's exactly what he did. 136 yards, 22 carries, one touchdown. Bryce Love was good. And USC hung around, but they trailed 14-0 at halftime, could not muster up enough offense in the second half. Stanford gets the win. USC drops to 22. Stanford, top 10 team in the country. The Pac-12 South is wide open. All right, and if you look at the top 25 rankings, again, we went over where the Pac-12 sits. I'll go over the top 25 in general here in just a moment. But Washington, Stanford, I still like USC. I think USC is going to be a team that you have to pay attention to at the end of the season. Arizona State beats Michigan State. Michigan State did not look good against Utah State. I don't know if that's a monumental win for Arizona State. It was enough to put them in the top 25. And then you have Utah. And that's where I wanted to go with this. The South is wide open. Colorado picked up a big win over the weekend, knocking off Nebraska. They're 2-0. That's a good win. A lot of hype surrounding Scott Frost, hometown boys back home. You don't remember Nebraska's game in week one was delayed. There's a lot of excitement surrounding this Nebraska squad. And Colorado has had excellent quarterback play through 2 weeks. They're at 2-0. Arizona State under Herm Edwards, 2-0. They've outscored their opponents by 45 points in two games. The Utes, not impressive on Saturday. I wasn't impressed with Utah 2 weeks ago. Arizona, I think they have the best quarterback in the Pac-12 South. Hasn't resulted into wins. A loss to BYU, another loss this past weekend. UCLA is horrible. USC, 1-1, but I'm telling you not to count out USC. USC is a team that will get better as the year goes. The USC team that we watched on Saturday against Stanford will not be the USC team that you see in the final two games against UCLA and Notre Dame. Mark my words. This is a good team. Are they a playoff contender? No. But they will get better. And by the end of the season, this USC team will have 8 to 9 wins, and they will be a factor in the Pac-12 championship in some regard. They're too talented defensively, they have too many studs offensively, and they have a true freshman quarterback. And while Clay Helton is going to be the subject of a lot of criticism and a lot of pressure over the next couple of weeks, this team will win 8 to 9 games, and I guarantee you, you don't want to play USC late in the season. And when I take a look at the schedule, and this is a storyline that I want to talk about later on in the week, they get Texas this weekend on the road. Texas has been dreadful. Tom Herman, it's not been good for him in Texas. The schedule sets up nicely for USC. Texas, Washington State, Arizona, Colorado, Utah, Arizona State. There's two ranked opponents on USC's schedule the rest of the way home. That's Arizona State and Notre Dame. And out of the opponents that are on that schedule, Utah is the only one that I could see being ranked when they actually play outside of Notre Dame at the end of the year. Notre Dame was not good on Saturday as well. But from a conference standpoint, Utah is the only team I would expect to be ranked when USC plays a conference contest. That's it. And that Utah game's in the middle of October, and the way Utah's looked, that's not a gimme either. USC schedule is setting up fine, and I'm not writing this team off yet. They weren't overly impressive against Stanford. I get it. The offense will get better. They have a budding star in Ware coming out of the backfield, one of the more dynamic players in the Pac-12 South. Do not sleep on USC. We've seen this too many times. We've got a break for just a moment. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up, and I want to talk more college football a little bit later on in the week. We spend the whole show talking about college football. We got to talk NFL. Week one almost in the books. Doubleheader action coming up tonight. We get the Lions and the Jets, and then we get the Rams and the Raiders. Doubleheader action tonight on ESPN. We'll talk NFL football when we return.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750. The play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
Back to close out this Monday edition of the show. One of those days where 1 hour is just not enough. I didn't even go over the top 25 rankings last segment. Ran out of time with that segment. Let me give you the top 25 rankings in college football right now. And, of course, we go by the AP poll. 1 through 5, Alabama, Clemson, Georgia, Ohio State, Oklahoma. Alabama gets 54 first place votes, Clemson 6. 6 through 10, Wisconsin, Auburn, Notre Dame, Stanford, Washington. Wisconsin drops one spot. Auburn stays the same. Notre Dame stays the same. Stanford moves up one spot. Washington drops one spot, even though they picked up a win. I know Notre Dame should have dropped. They barely beat Ball State. That was terrible. 11 through 15, Penn State, LSU, Va-Tech, West Virginia, TCU. 16 through 20, TCU, Mississippi State, Boise State, Central Florida, Michigan, Oregon. 21 through 25, Miami, USC, Arizona State, Oklahoma State, and for some reason, Michigan State. Barely beat Utah State, lost to Arizona State. Get Sparty out of the top 25. They don't belong. No way has that been a top 25 team in the country. There's no way. Let's talk NFL football. I only have a couple of minutes left on the show. Tomorrow, we will talk a lot of NFL football, trust me. Tonight, week one wraps up. Moments away from kickoff for the Jets and the Lions at Ford Field. And then after that, it's the Rams and the Raiders. We heard from Sam Darnold, Matt Stafford, Jared Goff, John Gruden earlier. A lot of excitement for the first Monday night doubleheader of the year. The biggest surprise for me yesterday, I go through all these games. Obviously, you can't watch every game. I try to watch as much as I possibly can. Cincinnati impressed me. Cincinnati picking up a 34-23 win over Indianapolis, blowing them out in the fourth quarter, scoring 17 unanswered. An 83-yard fumble return for a touchdown. Joe Mixon nearly broke the 100-yard barrier. I thought Andrew Luck was crisp in his first start, 39 of 53 for 319 yards and two touchdowns. I was impressed with Cincinnati. And the way the Bengals found ways to get A.J. Green the football, that's definitely a sign of things to come if you're a Bengals fan. Big disappointment, Jimmy Garoppolo. Not necessarily efficient for the 49ers. Did have a pick six. 15 of 33, 261 yards and a touchdown. I'll tell you, I think the 49ers are going to drastically miss Jerick McKinnon. And they were a sexy team in the offseason. Everybody seemed to jump on board with the 49ers because they have one of the best play callers in the league in Shanahan. And on top of that, Jimmy Garoppolo was a flat-out stud. I think he is the real deal, but he did struggle yesterday. Patriots-Texans was a fun game. Tom Brady hooking up with the Gronk 7 different occasions for 123 yards and a touchdown. The Gronk just picks up right where he left off. But the biggest surprise for me yesterday, even outside of Cincinnati, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Because the New Orleans Saints played great offensively, but they were dreadful on the defensive side of the ball. And Ryan Fitzpatrick looked good. I mean, Drew Brees was Drew Brees. Had 8 incompletions. Threw the ball 45 times and had 8 incompletions yesterday. Threw for 439 yards and 3 touchdowns, and the Saints lost. Alvin Kamara didn't get a lot of carries because of the shootout. He had 8 carries for 29 yards and a couple of touchdowns. The Saints are going to run the or they're going to throw the football. Kamara got a lot of work through the air. Drew Brees was insanely good, and the Saints lost. Fitzpatrick, 21 of 28, 417 yards, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions. That was the surprise of the day. Plus, he had another 36 yards running the football. He carved this New Orleans defense up. Mike Evans, 7 catches for 147 yards. DeSean Jackson, 5 catches for 146 yards. He also had 2 scores. Tampa Bay offensively is not going to do this very often, but the Saints defense was terrible yesterday. To me, that was the big surprise. New Orleans is at home, coming off a year in which they had a terrible ending to the season last year. I thought this team would be a force to be reckoned with, and they give up 48 points to Ryan Fitzpatrick. Because remember, the Buccaneers don't have Jameis Winston right now. That was a surprise. And it was probably, if you're a Saint fan, boy, that was a sock in the gut because you were just anticipating this year the way it came to a close. Outside of that, there really wasn't a lot of surprises. I thought Patty Mahomes was great. I did expect the Chargers to pick up a win, but the Chiefs found a way offensively, putting up 14 points in two separate quarters. The Broncos beating the Seahawks, that was not a surprise to me. Really, I mean, I guess I have to go back to it and say that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers pulled off the surprise of yesterday. We'll recap week one of the NFL as a whole tomorrow. Again, doubleheader action coming up in just a moment, beginning with the Jets and the Lions and then the Rams and Raiders tonight. Always fun to get Bill Lasky on the show. I'm appreciative of his time, and we'll talk some high school football tomorrow as well. Preseason is over. We are at the midway point of the high school football season, and now they count from here on out. Region action beginning this weekend as Carbon will travel to take on Union. Emory, they go up north to take on Judge Memorial. We'll have both games for you. Emory here on KOAL, Carbon on KRPX. We'll start talking some high school football, and there's a lot of other sports going on right now in the fall as well. So we'll continue to recap and cover everything for you right here on Drive Time Sports. Local sports coming up heavily tomorrow. For Travis Anderson, I'm Jordan Buscarini. As always, be safe. We will catch you tomorrow, and we are out.